I'm so happy to have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I actually just met you like not too long ago, right?
Yes.
Like how long? Like a couple weeks, I'd say?
It's been a couple weeks. Yeah.
And we, through Instagram.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I think I was live one day.
Yes.
And you were like, yo, how do I watch your live? Like, you know, I'm out and about and I can't listen to it right now.
Yeah.
And then I think I was like, you can't. You can't stay mineral.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, we like started talking and we actually spent New Year's Eve together.
We did.
Right?
We did.
I was, it was like the first New Year's Eve that like I didn't do anything with my family and I was in town. And you were like, hey, I don't have any plans. And we ended up like just winging it.
Just winging it.
And going out.
Had a good time.
To Arlington out of all places.
Yes.
I like never go out in Clarendon.
Yeah, I've never been there either.
Yeah.
Definitely not for New Year's.
No. So that was, and I don't think we'd do it again.
No. I definitely wouldn't.
No, but it was cool.
Sorry
so,
about that.
I mean, I'm glad we met that way. I think it's like super authentic. And another thing that like came from the show, like another friendship that I think is like starting and blossoming, right? Like in the, I think we're becoming closer and closer. And I'm grateful to have you on the show because I feel like the more I've gotten to know you, like you have a story, like everyone does. And I think that I want your story to be heard.
Sure.
And I know you're kind of like, this is my first podcast. And
this
I'm
is my first podcast.
I don't know how to feel about it, but I'm glad that like you're all game for it. And
yeah,
I just want like people to hear what you've been through, like who you are, where you're from, what are you doing now? And hopefully at least one person can relate or take something from it. So tell us a little bit like about yourself. Like,
all right.
Where you're from.
Yes.
Who are you?
So I'm Mel. I'm Mel Batista. And I was actually born in New York City.
Okay, New York?
Yep. My family is from the Dominican Republic.
Okay. Were you born in New York or
New York City?
Nice.
You know, but back then it was very different. Not that I'm that old, I said back then, you know, but it was very different where my mom would have us in the States in New York and then we'd go live in the Dominican Republic. So did that.
Oh, really? You were like back and forth?
Yeah, my first stamp 20 days later was no living, going to the Dominican Republic.
Really?
Yep, as a baby.
For how long?
Oh, to live there. I lived there for several years.
Wow.
Until like maybe six. And then back to New York.
Do you remember a lot? Like from
not too
from
much.
Childhood?
Not too much. Yeah.
No. Do you have a lot of family back there? Or
yeah, a lot of my family is actually still there. Either
really?
There or in the Dominican Republic. I mean Dominican Republic, obviously we're talking about that. Either there
or
New York,
New York
City or like Florida. A lot of them also.
Really? Mm-hmm. In the warmer weather. Experiencing
exactly.
Like crazy weather. So in New York, so you went from DR with your mom and do you have siblings?
I do.
How many? You have a lot.
My mom is three of us, my brother and my sister. And then we were raised with my two stepsisters. My stepdad is my dad. So yeah, he raised us.
Wow.
So it was five of us. And my real father, that's a whole other story, but it's 16 of us.
16?
Yeah, 16, you know.
16 plus 5.
16 with the three of us, you know.
Yeah.
But this
a lot of kids.
Yeah, it's a lot of kids.
It's a lot of kids. Do you keep in touch with all of them?
No, not all of them. You know, some of them are younger, and I haven't met two of them, so.
Dang.
But
that's wild.
But it mainly, you know, the older ones, we keep in touch. We see each other and stuff.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Did it take you a while to like get to know them? Like, how did you know there were so many out there? And how did you like reach all of them?
It's the thing is, how did we know? Yeah, you know, one of us find out, I guess, and there's another one, you know, so kind of, you know, spread the word around.
Your dad was like busy.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, I guess he had to beat his parents and stuff. I believe it's like 11 or 12 of them. So,
damn. You know. Where's he
at? A lot
of
Spanish.
I know a lot of Latin families have like a lot of kids.
He's in New York now, so.
Okay. Do you have a relationship with him?
So actually, I hadn't talked to him. I didn't have a relationship with him until last December.
Wow,
it had
recently.
Been like, yeah, it had been over 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So just recently, you know, I decided, you know, I didn't have any more hurt feelings or anything in my heart, you know, from him. But,
right.
You know, I decided, you know, I've forgiven him. So why not? He was turning 65. It was a big birthday they were doing. So I said, why not? You know, he wanted most of his kids, most they could possibly to be there. So.
Did he like know who you were out of so many kids online?
No, no. What's actually funny is that I lost a lot of weight since I seen him. My hair was short because I used to have long hair and I cut my hair short. And he hadn't seen me in over 10 years.
Was he like, this is another kid I didn't know?
I know, right? You would have thought. No, he looked at me and he actually looked at me and like just kept looking and then like looked back. He did a, you know, a double take.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you look like him? Like your dad?
Spit image.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? We all come out like our dads.
Can't deny it.
Man, that's crazy. And how did you, so you grew up in New York City. So you went back when you were 6 from DR.
Yeah.
To New York, right? Mm-hmm. And then how long were you in New York for?
We didn't stay there for too long. My mom ended up meeting my stepdad.
Okay.
So it was 5 of us. And, you know, New York can be tough if you go to public school, for
hell
sure.
Yeah.
You know, and so my parents couldn't afford private school for 5 kids, you know. So
yeah.
They had some friends that had moved to Glen Allen, Virginia, which is like near Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, shit.
And yeah.
I never heard about that.
They had some friends that had moved there and that they loved the area. And they were like, oh, this is great for our kids. So they moved over there with their kids.
Nice.
So then my parents were like, hey, let's go check it out. And they went and check it out. And then they were like, yeah, this is nice. Let's do this. We got 5 kids. You know, public school is not good over there. So
yeah.
Moved us on over there.
How old were you when you moved to Virginia?
I think I was 8.
Okay. You were still super young.
Yeah, I was still young.
So you were raised here in Virginia.
I was raised in Virginia. I went to some of my elementary, my middle school, and my high school.
Wow. And then how was that? Like, I mean, way different. You already knew like English fluently.
So,
right.
I knew English and stuff and Spanish.
Okay.
Because we kind of had both. So yeah, we, you know, there was no problem with that since we were in New York and stuff.
Yeah. That's what's up. So how did you like, did you feel like you had a hard time fitting in Virginia? Like, I mean, being from DR, being Latina.
Yeah,
like...
yeah, first, yes. And then I was also very tall when I was young. So, like,
you
if you want to start, like, bringing all that in, I felt.
How tall are you?
5'9".
I feel like in every podcast, I'm like, how tall are you? I have short woman syndrome. I'm like, I hate these.
Really? You're not short.
I'm 5'6". I'm short.
Oh, I don't know. I've never noticed that.
I've always, like, envisioned myself taller. Okay. And I'm not.
That all is cracked up to me.
Well, I mean, it's better than down here, I feel like. Like, 5'8 would be a super.
But you're okay. I mean, still okay. You know, you could be, you know, much shorter than that.
Yeah. Well, so Virginia. So
Virginia.
How was it growing up here?
Ooh, I did not like it.
You didn't like it?
I couldn't stand it.
Why?
I didn't like that area. We're not talking about Northern Virginia. Northern Virginia might as well be a whole other state.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
We're talking about Glen Allen, Virginia. It's very different over there. Not necessarily Southern. I just, I don't know. I guess I was just used to like the. I don't know,
well, not as like liberal.
It's not. Yeah,
right?
It's definitely not. No, if it wasn't from Northern Virginia, this would always be a red state.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
Exactly.
So, anyways, going back to it. So
yeah.
Yes, Virginia. I don't know. I just never cared for it. You know.
Yeah.
Definitely when I was in high school, I remember I was like,
like you wanted to get out.
I wanted to get out. Yeah.
So how did you? Well, what do you identify as?
Yeah, so I'm definitely, I love my ladies.
You
so,
love the ladies?
Yes, I love the ladies, and only the ladies, so. Yes.
Okay. So you're...
So, yeah, I'm definitely gay, I'm a lesbian.
Gay, lesbian,
yeah,
queer, whatever you want to identify as.
Yeah.
So, when did you know that, how did you come to you didn't know you were that?
So, I remember being in elementary school, like, already knowing,
You were, like, a player in, like, second grade.
I was always, I did some little naughty stuff in the corner and stuff over there. But I definitely always knew that because, I knew the way I would look at women and things that I would, think about and stuff, obviously. So, but I could not say anything because I was raised in the church. Yeah, my parents, like, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday, sometimes on Fridays.
What?
Sometimes Saturdays. Forget it if there's something special going on. It's, like, every day, like.
Really?
And they were really, really into. So they became, I was Catholic at first.
Yeah.
And then my mom and my stepdad, then when they went to church, they became Christian or whatever. So I guess I was raised, you know, in that and Christian, like non-denominational, they call it, whatever.
Wow.
But I was raised that way. And so I definitely could not say anything about that. I would get in trouble for easy things, you know, as it was.
Yeah.
Growing up wasn't easy on me. Definitely not emotionally, you know, and stuff. You know, and as I got older in life, you know, I was able to talk to my parents finally about a lot of stuff. So, but going back to it, so I knew, you know, definitely knew that I was gay from a very young age.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I was planning on staying around where I lived in that area, in Richmond, Virginia area. And I was going to continue nursing school because I became a nurse in the 11th grade.
Really?
So May, yeah.
I didn't know that.
I took the program and then senior year, and then I did summer school and stuff. So senior year, I only went to school half day, and then I would go work at 3 to 11 as a nurse.
Wow.
My senior year, yeah. So then my plan was to keep going on up, LPN, you know, RN and everything. So I was going to stay around there, but
yeah,
I had a lot of mixed emotions. Once I got into my senior year and stuff, you know, like I wanted to get out. I wanted to get out of the house. I just had
like
enough.
Be independent, get
be
out
independent,
there.
But also be able to be myself. Right. Like the main thing.
So they didn't know throughout.
My parents had no idea throughout those time. There was no way that I could have told them. I would
have. You didn't have like any like girlfriends that were friends that stayed over the.
Yeah, so I had one at one point, you know, that
like they never caught on. Like
it was hard because I remember I had three other sisters as well, so they would always be around too. If when somebody sleeps over, it's like a whole sleepover.
Yeah.
So it's a little hard. I think I by the time you know senior year hit and everything, I think I was like ready to explode, you know. So you know, it was kind of last minute. I'm like, I need to go to college, and that's how last minute it was.
Yeah.
I had no idea where to go. So I got convinced, you know, because I was raised in the church. I got convinced to go to Liberty University. You ever heard of that school?
Yeah, of course I do.
Liberty University, all right?
Yeah.
So I got convinced to go there. And why did I do that? The only reason why I say it is because I went from not being able to be myself to really not be able to be myself.
Yeah.
So it got worse. Why did I do that?
Yeah.
So, you know, my parents thought it was a good thing, you know, and then they were, like I said, it was so last minute that hardly any schools were, you know, closed already.
Did you, like, accept at this point that you were gay?
Yeah.
Or were you trying to, like, convince yourself?
Myself? Oh, I see what you're saying. No.
Yeah.
So at that point, I still had it. So I went to the school, to university, and it got even worse, you know, that I was definitely trying to convince myself to not, you know, I had a boyfriend there. Had a boyfriend until I realized that he was in love with me and he was going to propose to me. And I was like, let's stop this right here. Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I felt real bad, you know, but that's when it definitely hit me. I actually got in trouble at the school, because you know, someone found out that I was gay and the school, did not accept that. So
what they do, like write you a letter, like,
it's against the, it's basically against the, you know, their rules and their policies and stuff. And so I was being booted out.
Wow.
So that's when, you know, I got really fed up and I'm like, what do I do? You know, like, what do I do? My parents, by that point, had already, heard that I was gay.
Oh, they heard about it from the school?
No, they heard about it because my roommate at that time, unfortunately, told on me. And so
why?
It was horrible. It was a horrible thing. And you know, supposedly that was like my best friend at the university, you know. But anyway, so that was that. And
And what year was this?
This was this was 2002.
Okay.
2002.
Wow.
And so then I that's when I decided, you know, I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, you know, and things started getting rough with my parents because they didn't accept that I was gay. So I decided to join the military. That's when I joined the Air Force.
Cool.
Yep, joined the Air Force. And I did that to, because honestly, to get away, you know, to figure out what to do with my life, you know, and
kind of, you know, just travel.
I was lost, you know, and I knew that I could get, you know, benefits, and but also travel, learn some things, you know, maybe, you know, just a different experience in life. So.
And why the Air Force?
The Air Force, because I knew that.
I mean, why the best force?
Why the best force? Yeah, well, because
I'm an Air Force vet too. People don't know.
Exactly, they're the best. The Air Force is the best.
It is the best.
It is. You know, I spoke to all the different recruiters, believe it or not, and I just the Air Force. You know, not everyone could get into the Air Force, and you know, I just for me, I didn't. You know, I thought about it. I'm like, well, I don't want to go that hardcore, like the Marines, you know. I don't want to do that, you know. And I didn't want to be on a ship a lot of times, you know.
Right.
So I went with the Air Force.
It was like the best fight.
But yeah, it, was just, it just worked out, you know.
Wow.
So yeah, joined the Air Force.
So you joined, how long were you in?
I was in the Air Force for almost 5.
5, okay. Did you get to travel? Like, did you get to
do what you wanted to do? Yeah, I got to travel. Yep.
Nice.
I got deployed some. I was security forces at first.
Oh.
Yeah. Then I
always felt bad for security forces.
Yeah, it wasn't easy, that's for sure. It wasn't easy. And I, you know, ended up cross training over to
IT. Oh, nice. IT?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Super cool.
Yeah.
So you get out 5 years later. What year?
2010. Yeah.
Okay. 13-14 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Time goes by. So what'd you do? You got out, pursued IT?
I pursued IT, but I didn't go. So at first I couldn't find a job and stuff. So I was working as taking care of my friend's mother who was ill. I went back to like my CNA days.
Yeah.
So I was doing that. And then I started looking at government jobs. So then I
got into the government.
Yep.
Sweet.
Yes.
Wait, so when did you come out to your parents? Like,
so I came out to my parents. So, you know, my best friend at the time in college, you know, mm-hmm. had, you know, told them that I was gay. So when they asked me, I told them that, yeah, it was true, you know.
So they knew before you joined the Air Force.
So they knew before I joined the Air Force.
And did they accept it?
They did not accept it. It was rough. So my parents actually, for years, they did not accept it. My dad stopped talking to me for a long time, you know, and my mom, you know, the conversation, she would call me just to make sure I was okay, you know, like, I was alive.
Yeah.
Conversations, you know, hey mom, hi, you know, how are you? Doing fine? Okay. All right.
Like short.
That was it. Very short. Yeah.
That's so sad. And you don't have any gay family members?
No.
None. That you know about.
That I know about. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But I always say, I'm like,
exactly.
They're always, yeah. I mean, it's sad.
It's not easy. It's sad, but it's not easy. And especially, you know, there's, unfortunately, cultures and stuff have a lot to do with it. And
of course.
Latino families, it's very rough.
I know.
It's very rough. So yeah,
I know, but
so,
it's like what we were just talking about. It's like it's not the no one chooses a harder life. If I could choose to be straight, I would.
Very quickly,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So then you get out, you take care of your friend's mom that's ill. Did you think about pursuing like nursing again?
Yeah, it did. I thought about it, but you know, I had gone through so much by then. You know, definitely different experiences in the military, you know, good, but a lot of bad ones, you know. And then, you know, just, oh yeah, but when I was in the military, don't ask, don't tell, was very alive.
Same.
Exactly. So, you know.
I got married to a guy.
Yeah.
Wow. To hide it, yeah.
To hide it, yeah.
I had like a couple friends that got kicked out, yeah. And they were like, you're in that circle, you're coming up.
Yeah.
And I talked to one of my buddies, and yeah, we got married. I mean, a lot of people did that.
Yeah.
It seems like a lifetime ago, right?
It does. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Yes.
So then, I mean, and yeah, I'm sure you went through a lot, and you still deal with things from the military, and that we all do, and that, you know, it's just like it stays with you forever. Exactly. Unfortunately, the good and the bad,
correct.
You know. Yeah, I thought about a saying that, or a quote that I read that was like, what was it, like, war stays with you forever or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember the exact quote, but I mean, people deal with real shit. You know, mental health is like huge for me because
yeah.
I wish like when we were younger, like in middle school, high school, we talked about it, and I'm glad people do now, but I mean, it's rough.
Yeah. I mean, it's rough because you already have to deal with, like, regular shit like everyone else. But then you also have to deal with, you know, the fact of being gay and then not being accepted by your own family and your own.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like we're constantly, like, we've always had to hide who we are or find a solution to, like, keep surviving.
Exactly.
You know, which is crazy. And that's what I feel like makes, I don't know, like, this podcast and the women that I want on it and, you know, women, men, whoever I decide to have on it or whoever wants to be on it, but mostly queer women. Like, I want to bring attention to the strength that, like, that we've gone through, especially as, like, minorities and already having to be a minority, already having to be, you know, prove yourself, being immigrants, having to learn the language, like, having to prove to your family that you're going to be better than the last generation and pull the family forward and have better opportunities. And if you have kids, provide better opportunities. It's like, there's always so much pressure for real, like, put on us. And especially like first generation, you know, Americans. And I mean, we're not, but I'm just saying, like, well, you were born in New York, right?
Yeah.
So you are actually.
I am. Yeah.
So like, it's like, it's just so much pressure because they have so many expectations from you. Like, you know, I feel like a lot of times it's like, well, I brought you to this country and I gave you this opportunity. What are you going to do? Right. And then you're already facing all of that. So professionally, I feel like we have to excel.
Right.
Because if not, our family is just going to like disown us.
Right.
And then after that, it's like, oh, I'm gay. And it's like, really? Like all, I feel like sometimes it's like, we've done all of this for you. And this is how you like, betray us or how you treat us, or I don't know. I just feel like it takes a lot of strength to come out and like accept who you are. You know what I mean? So
I fought for so long, especially since I was raised, you know, in the church and stuff. I fought for so long. Like, no, there's something wrong with it. No, it's gotta be me, you know. No, I'm gonna make myself, you know, meet this guy, or you know, it's just it sucks that you even have to, you know, think that you don't have to force yourself, you know.
But there's nothing wrong in who you are.
Exactly.
You know, and that, I think like realizing that and accepting that, and whether that's through like therapy, self, whatever you method you use, like, to get to that point, I think. And I think now, like, in the 30s, you know, upper 30s, like, I don't know, you come to the realization it's like the bullshit. It's all bullshit, you know. Mm-hmm. Just accept who you are, own it. And who cares what the fuck you think?
Exactly.
And I wish we had that mentality back then.
Exactly.
Back then, yeah. It's crazy.
You have to have that mentality, you know, because you know, everyone lives their own life, you know. And I'm not hurting anyone, you know.
Yeah, I always say that though. I'm like, I'm not a bad person. I'm not harming anybody.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's all a judgmental thing, you know, in reality.
Yeah.
You know? Okay, so
especially our culture, you know? The Latino culture is. The Latin culture is very judgmental.
It's very judgmental.
Within ourselves.
Yes.
And it kind of reminds me, like, in the LGBT community. Like, it's also very judgmental.
Yeah.
Like, every community.
Every community really is. We're human beings.
Watch your mic. Don't give me that. No, but it's we're human beings. We're not perfect. And then just, like, trying to be a better human being every day is, like, the only thing that we can do.
Yep.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, moving forward... you joined the government and you pursued IT, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then when did you, I'd like to talk, if you're open to it, about what you opened to me about the other night, about your surgery that you had.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. How did that, would you like to share that story?
Yeah, for sure. So I started, you know, years ago, I started experiencing you know, like headaches and stuff, right? And more than normal. But then right during the time when COVID hit, it was about, I'll say, maybe like July, let's see, COVID was 2020, right? So July 2019, it kind of started all where, you know, I would get like those headaches from migraines, like really bad migraines, you know, the whole light, you know, have to be in the dark because it's so bad, you know? And so I started getting migraines, and then like I started like having like this feeling of like this pressure in my head and my neck and my back, and like my I would start hearing my heart beating literally in my ears. Like I could literally like the it was literally in my ear, and it was all day, every day that noise was in my ear. And you know, then
sounds
I started
unbearable.
I was like starting to get so scared, because then my eyes started to like get really pressurized, and like I started to like I guess it started to kind of close in.
Yeah.
So like I wouldn't even see, sometimes I would like run into the table and stuff because I wouldn't see that there was a table there.
Like your vision literally.
I started getting tunnel vision.
Oh
yeah,
my God.
Correct. And so,
I'm getting like dry eyes just thinking. I do a dry eyes already.
Yeah,
I'm thinking about that shit.
You know, so then, you know, I had to start going to the, you know, go see an eye specialist, you know, and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, they had no idea what was going on. I first went and saw an ear, nose, and throat doctor because of the sound in my ear,
right.
Of how much my ears hurt. You know, they didn't find nothing. Then I went to, I told them about the heartbeat sound, went to cardiovascular, you know, they didn't find nothing. You know, then I went to, I feel like I went to
every doctor possible,
yeah, you know, and then I started seeing various neurologists, and I finally went to one that knew, you know, what was going on. And he's like, I believe you have, it's called IIH, idiopathic intracranial hypertension. And he was like, you know, but this is very rare. You know, he's like, in order to see if you have it, we've got to do a lot of studies, you know, and stuff, and have you do a lumbar puncture and stuff. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, a lumbar puncture, we have to do that to be able to see what the pressure is for this condition, you're saying. So,
yeah.
So he was the one that, you know, that said that. So I started doing the studies and everything. And COVID hit at that time.
Mm.
And so everything came to a halt, remember?
Yeah.
So I did not get to, I had to basically halt everything. There was no more studies, you know, or anything. Couldn't do my exams that I needed to do. So I suffered for like the next 2 years.
Damn.
With this, and it only got worse and worse and worse, got worse. So they were like, you know, emergency, you know, eventually they got to like doing
emergency
like
procedures. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I remember like the emergency procedures,
yeah, yeah.
You know, so, but you know, until then I had to kind of hold on. What they were able to do for me was do those lumbar punctures. Lumbar punctures, the first time they did it, it was really rough. They couldn't, you know, get it at, they had to try different, people had to try, but basically
it's
it
super dangerous, right?
It's very dangerous. Yeah, it's very dangerous, and it relieves though the pressure. But I haven't even really told you about the condition. So the condition is this. So what it is like you have the spinal fluid that is around your brain, and then you have it's also, you know, part of the spinal cord. So we absorb it. Our body absorbs it every day, all day, and we produce it all day long.
Right.
And so it basically, you know, it spins around your head and your spinal cord, and it gets absorbed, and you know, it produces again,
yeah, yeah.
So it's constantly flowing. So for me, it was not it wasn't coming out fast enough. So basically all the pressure, all that water and everything was staying in my head, and it wasn't coming out, running down to my spinal cord. Yeah, and so not at the speed that it should have, you know,
right,
my body's still absorbing it. So it got to the point where I couldn't even see, like I would, it would be completely black. Like I would just see black.
I couldn't see anything.
I couldn't see anything. I would just see black, you know, constantly like ready to pass out, you know, it got really bad. I would see, you know, because at the beginning I was seeing blurry. I remember right. I started seeing a lot of blurry stuff. You know, it was double vision first, and it was blurry, and it was just, you know, got bad. And then so I realized that I couldn't see anything. And definitely when I bend it over, it was just complete blackout, you know. So that's when they realized that they have to do the surgery. And they have to find a doctor that can do it. You know, luckily we're in Northern Virginia. So
we are in a good area,
you know, to have good doctors. So there was a doctor there that I was the seventh patient of his for the surgery. So
I had no choice at this point. I had to be done.
And they told me, you know, you're gonna lose your eyesight.
They told you that?
Yeah, that I was gonna lose my eyesight.
Oh my god.
Because that's how, because of the pressure. The pressure was, you know, the nerves, you know, the pressure on my eye, you know, my eyes and everything. It was just, it was horrible. So I had to, you know, I had to do it. And since, you know, technology is so much advanced these days, it's amazing. They didn't have to like cut my head open. They actually were able to do it through the veins and stuff, you know, through the down here in my groin area. They went through there and they...
from there to your brain?
To my brain, yeah. They put a metal there, a stent to open it up. To be able to allow the water to start flowing the way it should.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's ludicrous. Yeah.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, what a difference it has done for me. Those were rough, you know, and the fact that I could lose my vision to that,
right.
You know.
So scary.
That got me very scared. Yeah.
So it was obviously a success.
Yeah, it was a success.
So what happens now?
Like, yeah, so I just, you know, every year I go and I get CAT scans done on my brain, you know, you know, I was going to tell you too, you know, the recovery was very rough. I actually had a hard time speaking.
You said you had to go to speech, right?
Yeah, I had to go to speech. I had to do speech therapy because I would actually stutter. Like really bad, and then I would also forget words. Like at the beginning, I couldn't even remember Spanish hardly.
Really?
And, yeah, and then English, you know, like I couldn't remember, like, you know, this was a cup, you know, or a glass. I couldn't remember what this was called.
The basic
things. Yeah.
Wow. So how long did it take you to like get back to normal?
It took me about a year.
Wow.
It took me about a year. Yeah. You know, it was a long hard.
Time. And were you hard. Alone during this? Did you have like someone with you, family?
So I was fortunate enough to have my my ex at that time.
Okay.
Her and her family were there taking care of me. We weren't even together at that point.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was still a good thing that
you know, she was there for you. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how do you feel? I mean, today, would you do it all over again, like the surgery? And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely something, you know,
wow,
I recommend to everyone. And you know, I had no choice anyways to do it, but you know, you know, it's just I was lucky to be able to have the option to do that, you know, because I'm sure this happened back then. They just didn't know. There was no way they could know what it even was, where to even begin, you know? So,
that's so crazy. And does it run in the family at all? Like, anybody that...
I don't even know a soul that has it. I actually just, recently I did meet someone that has it, but it's a very rare case that not a lot of people...
What is it, like one in what?
I don't remember, honestly.
Millions, I mean?
Yeah. I don't remember the statistics on it.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. It's rare, so...
I mean, good for you that you're lucky and you're blessed to be able to come out of that and like have your eyesight.
For sure. And have my speech because I thought for
sure. Yeah, have your speech, be able to walk. I mean, those injections and those punctures are so dangerous.
Yeah.
And I've never heard of a brain surgery that where like they enter through the groin area. That surprised me so much when you told me that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hope that like someone that's listening know someone that's gone through it and can relate, you know, and I'm hopefully y'all could connect or something. It'd be like really cool. Just because you're not the only one, you know?
Yeah.
No, and just like getting the voice heard. And I mean, when's the first time that you went to the doctor? Like, what's the first symptom that you had that made you go to the doctor? Was it like a severe symptom or was it?
The ear. No, just the ear. Like the noise in my ear. So at first it was just like a whoosh sound. You know, like a whooshing sound.
It's so crazy because I have a sound. Sorry. Like I have fluid in my ear, in my eardrums, from deployment. Mm-hmm. From not wearing like ear protection and having them like, you know, damaged. Right. And I can't get it out because they can't puncture. They would have to puncture the eardrum.
The eardrum.
So I deal a lot with like kind of like a plastic bag sound, like a crinkling. And I've gone to ear and throat and they're like, you're fine. And I'm like, and now talking to you, I'm like,
I'm not crazy, man. You hear it.
I'm like, I know what the hell I'm feeling and hearing. I'm going to go check it out.
Definitely. You know, I mean, remember there's the tinnitus and everything though too. Like, you know, I know you got a noise in there.
Yeah.
They didn't believe me either when I was telling them. I'm like, it's like a whoosh sound, you know, and like,
yeah.
And it became like my heartbeat sound. You know, that got even crazier.
Wow.
But yeah, that was the first sign was that. And because it was so bothersome because it would like vibrate also, you know, vibrate.
Dude,
and
mine
like,
does the same
hear.
Thing. Como un tambor, like you know, like a drum when you go like that and it goes like that's how I feel sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go get checked out more about my ear.
Yeah.
Who knows?
No,
I don't.
It's that water in there.
It's just water, yeah, fluid. Water. But the ears, you know, like especially like did you ever deal with like the equilibrium?
Equilibrium, yeah.
That's so tough. Yeah. And I mean I'm sure you have like meds for life, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I mean, at least there's something helping you out, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Yes. I mean, I still deal a lot with, you know, you know, I could be talking and all of a sudden I would just
like
forget what I was talking about, you know, or I just don't remember. I still have it where I just don't remember something. You
right.
Know? But, you know, that's part of it, you know, and then. I also, you know, I'm an Air Force veteran. Like we had said, I have PTSD, so I know that's also part of, you know, things too.
Yeah.
Now we deal with all that, so. So.
People don't get that sometimes. They're like, no. I was just talking to you. How could you forget? I'm like,
yeah.
I can't explain.
Yeah, it's unless you.
But you have like a double. You have that, and then the surgery.
So it definitely.
Well.
Happens.
Yeah.
But you know that's better than I'll take that over and over again.
Of course,
see, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're able to live.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
walk, you know,
so. I'm so happy. I'm so happy that like you came out of that and, you know, push forward day by day. And I know you still deal with like we all do. Like everyone deals with struggles, and especially for the military, especially I'm sure from that surgery, plus other things, you know. But take it one day at a time, right? That's what I always say. I'm like one day at a time. If I can get through today, tomorrow's
really
a new day.
That's all we can. Yeah. I really have a hard time thinking about tomorrow.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's too short. And I think that's why we connected.
Yeah.
You know why we're connecting. And I didn't even know you were like a vet or Air Force vet or whatever. We just went out to New Year's and now we're like building a friendship. So
yeah,
I'm grateful for
everything
it.
Happens for me, right?
Another thing because of the show I'm grateful for, honestly.
Yes.
For real. All right, let me ask you a question. So what's like, if someone's listening right now, like relating to your story or just listening to your story, like, what is one thing that, I don't know, a message to the people who are listening, like, about you, about your outlook on life, about what you've been through? It could be anything. Just, like, a last word. I think that you've had, like, such a story. And I know we didn't get into real, like, in deep detail, but just, like, a vague story of who you are and how you got here and what you've been through, which is, like, a lot of suffering, like, especially through that. You know, that you've been through, like, what is something that, like, you'd like to leave people with about you, about Mel?
Yeah. So I'd have to say, I would have to say to be really your authentic self, because I struggle with that for so long, you know, and outside of everything. So even coming down to the way I wanted to dress, you know? Yeah, I hated wearing dresses, you know? So, you know.
We all did.
We all, right? We all did. being your authentic selves, you know, and, you know, even throughout life, you know, even going in the military, I was security forces, you know, at first, you know, what, me, a female, went to security forces, you know, mm-hmm. no, but that's what I wanted to do, you know, so it could be, you know, in that case, or it could be the fact that, you know, you're gay or the fact that you want to dress like this or, you know, however, you know, definitely be your authentic self, because I struggled a lot with that. And I, you know, tried to please people all the time because of it. And I, you know, was a constant people pleaser. You know, it's
and then like you end up suffering at the end. Yeah.
Exactly. And in the end, I'm the one that ended up suffering, you know. So I wish that, you know, I would have told myself back then, you know, I would have saved myself a lot of headache and heartbreak and just a lot of, you know, you know, people don't realize that when they judge you and when they don't accept you for being you, what they create, and especially, you know, from a child, you know, you know, you got to deal with all that, you know, growing up in life throughout your, you know, stages in life. And even when you're older, you know, you got to eventually like get therapy for it, or it's something that, you know, is just going to stick with you, you know? I would definitely, that's, you know, I would tell myself that, because, you know, I could have just saved myself to a lot of, you know, not being so hard on myself, I guess, in life, you know, and love myself more, you know, because it went down to that, you know, to that point that I didn't love myself enough, you know, because everyone else judged me and didn't accept me for who I was. So, you know.
And I feel like that's, I mean, it's a beautiful message. Like, we all struggle, I think, every day, most of us, to love ourselves and to learn how to love ourselves and accept ourselves, you know, and be authentic. And I couldn't agree more. Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah. Like, thanks for coming on and, like, just being open and talking about your story. And I hope, like, I know one person at least is going to resonate, relate, or take something from it.
Yes.
And for real, I appreciate it. And, like, I look forward to our friendship.
Sure, me too.
What's coming, and more New Year's and better places.
Exactly.
But Ario, thanks, Mel.
For sure. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm happy. I'm proud of you too for what you're doing. This is awesome.
Thank you. Hopefully we'll help some people.
Exactly. I'm excited to be a part of it. So
thanks, Mel. All right, yo.
All right.